I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's meatball, my Rons? This is Behind the Bastards, a podcast about the worst people in all of history. And this week, we are talking about Ronnie the Big D DeSantis. Meatball Ron. Ron de Sanctimonious. Lockdown Ron, I think, is the other thing that Trump calls him. Anyway,
we all have horrified faces right now.
I know. You all have beautiful faces. And let me introduce those beautiful faces right now, because no one else could be the guests on our Ronathan Sanctimonious D episodes. But Cody Johnston and Katie Stoll.
That's right. We are the faces here.
Yeah. Vote for me.
Is that your
wrong?
That
was amazing.
Really not. I think it's Ted Cruz doing wrong.
Yeah.
This is like a frozen animatronic if you were to see him do it.
Yeah. It was unsettling.
Malfunctioning.
It was when Cody becomes president and gets his animatronic Cody in the Hall of Presidents.
Oh, no, it's when I become president, and that's the big reveal. That's who I've been.
I actually am like this.
So, guys, y'all, yins, what would your nicknames be if Trump gave you a nickname?
I probably something like... like Dirty Cody or something.
Dirty Cody.
It alludes to like the unkempt nature
disheveled.
Of my persona, disheveled.
Dusty Cody,
yeah, something like that.
I don't know.
Beardy. Beardo Cody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Beardo. Yeah,
Harry Cody.
Yeah, Beardo. Yeah.
I don't know what mine would be. Probably Crazy with a K or something.
Crazy Katie.
Crazy Katie.
Mine would just be That Woman.
That woman.
Sure.
See, I think he would just alter his Ron DeSantis nickname for me and call me Meatball Rob, because Ron and I are both very Italian, tragically Italian.
That's not wrong.
Same, actually.
But I have never, ever thought of you as a Rob.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you've never thought of me as a meatball. Wow, Katie, thanks. Wow. Hurtful.
Hurtful. Occasionally, sure.
Yeah. Okay.
We're honest with each other. No.
Wow.
Just the Rob. Seriously, has anybody called you Rob before?
Not and lived. No.
Yeah. That's weird.
So, okay. So, Ron, get on it.
Something with machetes, maybe.
It is.
No, that's too cool sounding.
Very funny. My favorite thing about Donald Trump. Because, you know, he's a bad person. Hate him. Done tremendous damage both to my family and to the world. But I have, you know, as a writer, as a longtime comedy writer, game recognized game. And he is an incredible nickname giver. Just stunningly effective. My favorite example of that is Meatball Ron, because people may not be aware of this. He hasn't publicly called Ron DeSantis Meatball Ron. In fact, it was back in February, a story broke that in private, Trump was calling him Meatball Ron as an insult. Mm-hmm. This is back when he was publicly calling him like Lockdown Ron and DeSanctimonious, which are both much worse nicknames.
Oh, terrible.
And as soon as everyone heard he's calling him this in private, it instantly became like nationwide DeSantis' nickname.
It's a hit. You did it. Yeah.
And Trump
from the privacy of your own home, still did it.
Trump has even been like, no, I'd never call him that. You know, it's inappropriate. I'm not going to engage in anti-Italian discrimination.
Oh, he's an amazing.
Oh, it's so funny.
He's so good at the marketing and just like he knows how to do it, because all he needs to do is like, I would never call him that. Maybe some people call him Meatball Ron. I wouldn't call him that.
Not me. Not going to call him
that. He certainly rolls off the tongue. Yeah. He should. I don't know.
It's a great nickname made up by a smart man, but no. Yeah,
but I wouldn't know him. Some people are calling me Meatball Ron.
So, are y'all ready to learn the ballad of Meatball Ron? We will not be titling this episode.
I have a question for you before we begin. Do you address his name, his last name?
Oh, yeah. Wait, his last name?
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Because this is Cody's favorite thing about him.
Yeah, it's a little hobby horse, a little factoid. His name is pronounced DeSantis.
Yes.
But he pronounces it DeSantis,
yeah,
because when he was running for governor, people called him DeSantis, and he was like, I guess it's DeSantis now. He just changed the way he pronounced his name under like vague social pressure, which I think is pretty amazing,
and very consistent to the man we are going to be talking about.
Exactly, Ronathan, I just wanted to color it with a little.
Oh yes, yes. So. Ronathan J. DeSantis was, due to a filing mishap, born under the legal name Ronald Dion DeSantis on September 14th, 1978 in Jacksonville, Florida. Now, but you're all wondering about that middle name, right? Dion? That's an odd middle name for a meatball. Well, Ronnie's father, also Ron DeSantis, was a huge fan of Dion DiMucci, the doo-wop singer, whose most well-known hit was the 1961 song Run Around Sue.
I played it at my birthday party last night.
That's why Governor Ron DeSantis' middle name is Dion.
That's so funny.
Oh my God.
Yeah, delightful. Just right out the gate with some mind-blowing factoids.
Ronald Dion DeSantis.
Yeah, Dion DeSantis. Mm-hmm.
It's a good change, almost to DeSantis.
Runaround Sue.
Yeah.
Almost the same name as Deion Sanders, who would have been a better governor of Florida.
Really
probably. He might have been a terrible person. I have no idea.
We are all in on Sanders.
Okay, that's good. That's good. So I should note off the top here that when I say Ron was born in Florida, I am referring to the state in the southeastern portion of the United States, not the seminal genre-defining rap artist Flo Rida, a.k.a. Tramar Dillard, who recently represented San Marino in the 2021 Eurovision Song Contest. Listeners get confused whenever we mention the state, and I want to assure you that Meatball Ron was not birthed xenomorph-like from the belly of one of America's great cultural treasures.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah. I double-checked.
Okay.
I double-checked. Well, I even sent an email request to the sheriff of Jacksonville, who responded, please stop messaging us about Flo Rida.
That seems like a pretty good confirmation.
So,
okay.
And you trusted them?
Well, you know, I legally can't further my suspicions until we get some sort of like a photo
for the police. Okay,
of Ron bursting out
like over it. Here.
All right.
See, AI will not be of any use to me until we can generate a perfect cover of that scene from Alien, where it's Ron DeSantis bursting out of Flo Rida's chest. And Flo Rida singing whatever song Flo Rida got famous for. I know nothing else about Flo Rida.
I'm pretty sure
it was called Meatball Run.
To this, someone has to be able to do something like that.
Sure, so. Yeah.
We'll see.
Prove me right or wrong. I forget which. So before we discuss Ron DeSantis' childhood, we should talk briefly about his family background. His mom and dad were the first generation of their family to move to Florida. He is fairly recent, about as recent, I think about as recent as my family is. immigrants to good old-fashioned the United States. Most of his relatives remained in Western Pennsylvania and Northwest Ohio, which is why classic. Ron now... Classic greaseball stuff.
But just Italians in Western PA and Ohio. Damn, mm-hmm. All right.
Oh, yeah. No, it's what we do, baby.
Get up there in Farrell, get to Akron. Come on.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Akron, the promised land. That's what, for generations, Italians were like sitting around in Tuscany looking out at like the unfolding glory of nature and going, fuck, I wish this was Akron.
I want grayer skies.
So because of the fact that most of his family has stayed in this chunk of the Midwest, Ron claims in his memoir, which he published immediately prior to launching his presidential campaign, that despite growing up in Florida, he is culturally a Midwesterner. Quote, I was geographically raised in Tampa Bay, but culturally my upbringing reflected the working class communities in Western Pennsylvania and Northeast Ohio, from weekly church attendance to the expectation that one would earn his keep. This made me God-fearing, hardworking, and America-loving. And there's a lot that's funny about that, particularly the fact that it's kind of insinuating that Floridians are like shiftless, godless degenerates, which is true.
That's exactly what he's saying. And there's this element of like, I invaded the place and took over with like, it's like this weird, like reverse, like Americanized, like great replacement thing of like, yeah, well, culturally I'm here and I'm bringing those values to Florida, but also he wants to make America Florida, right?
Yeah.
So what? So like, what is it? Do you want to actually make America?
Yeah. What is it?
Like Ohio's version of Florida? Like, yeah. What is he saying?
Yeah, the Ohio version of Florida, which I don't know. There's a Jimmy Buffett joke there, but it's not coming to me right now. Mm. So Ron's decision to do this has been rightly James Buffett. That's the Midwestern Jimmy Buffett.
That's fine.
He's scared of the water. He doesn't get anywhere close to the coast.
I think it's actually pronounced James Buffet.
James Buffet. Okay. So this has been made fun of by a lot of people. It's worth noting that he only very recently started claiming to be culturally Midwestern in his initial congressional campaigns and first governor gubernatorial campaign. He described himself repeatedly as from Florida, from Tampa Bay. So this is something he has picked up as an attempt to get votes in the Midwest.
Ingratiate himself.
Yeah.
The common man.
Yeah, the common idiot. Like, that's what... That's what he's saying about Midwesterners is like, they're so dumb, I can pretend to be from there despite growing up as far away almost as you can.
Right. It's funny because like he's insulting the Midwest by like, you're dumb enough, you'll believe this. But also he's insulting Floridians by being like, yeah, they're fucking stupid.
I'm not one of them.
And I'm not one of them. I'm bringing my good shit over there. Like, it's just both.
And it has not seemed to work. A recent article on FloridaPolitics.com notes that he is at least 10 points behind Trump in Pennsylvania, and he recently dropped to third place in the Ohio primary polls behind Vivek Ramaswamy.
Shocking. Vivek. Come on.
He is 55 points behind Donald Trump there. Damn. So,
oof, that's painful.
Hasn't exactly played out for him. Wait, which state? That's Ohio.
Ohio.
Oh, okay. How is he doing in the Midwest?
How's he doing in Florida?
He's not beating Donald Trump, last I checked. Like,
yeah, I didn't think so.
How could he be, realistically? That's actually what we're talking about. That's the whole point of this week's episodes. So back to his family. Ron gets his interest in politics from his grandfather, who was a major figure in the Republican Party of mid-century Ohio. He was on deck in 1960 for a major political scandal where a number of voting machines failed during an election and led to something like 1,500 people's votes failing to be counted, effectively disenfranchising them, right? This is like a very serious issue. The Secretary of State, who was a fairly rare Republican in state government at that point in time, cleaned house and put Philip Rogers, Ron's grandpa, in as director. By all accounts, he was very good at this job, and he became a respected expert on election integrity. The Republican Party in Ohio in those days was not a mighty force, but Philip gained widespread respect and traveled around the state helping to ensure integrity in a number of smaller elections. When the local steelworkers union needed to do a vote, they trusted him to manage it and ensure that it was done with integrity. He was even contracted out to other states, including Louisiana, to help them set up modern voting machine systems. Rogers is described by one colleague as, quote, someone who believed in the way the system worked. He was political, but not a politician. And instead, someone who believed enough in the system to work a pretty thankless and intricate job. By all accounts, he was not especially ideological, and I've run into no complaints of him taking advantage of this job to further his own political ends. Crucially, Roger was on the moderate wing of the Republican Party. One write-up from NBC News notes, "There was a group of Goldwaterites who were a thorn in the side of the party at the time," says Binning, referring to acolytes of Barry Goldwater, the failed ultra-conservative presidential candidate in 1964. Phil wasn't in with them. This was one of his, like, fellow Republicans in Ohio at the time. So he's not an extremist, not a hard right guy. Ron DeSantis, the dad of our Ron DeSantis, the son of this dude, moved the family away from its Midwest roots after he graduated in 1970 and got a job for Nielsen, the company that used to determine what TV shows got renewed. Most of our Gen Z viewers will not know what the fuck we're talking about when we say mention Nielsen families, but once upon a time, people paid money to subscribe to something called cable because we hadn't yet invented LimeWire. TV shit. They're not going to remember LimeWire either.
Yeah.
Like, the fuck is that?
TV shows lived or died based on how many Nielsen viewers tuned into them. The basic idea was like a percentage of families in each state got like sent a box that they would hook up to their TV and it would record what they were watching. And then Nielsen would do some whack-ass math to determine how many people are actually watching the show, and advertisers would use this data to decide where to buy ad space and what the value of ad space was, right? And thus was American popular culture shaped for decades. Old Ron, as he probably is not called, was a low-level cog in this system. He's physically putting the boxes into people's houses. Our Ron DeSantis's mom, it was a first-generation Polish immigrant and became a critical care nurse. It's interesting to look at what some of the elder adults in Ron's youth did for a living. His parents' siblings became a priest and a nun, respectively, which suggests a strong Catholic upbringing. Our Ron doesn't talk about this as much as he speaks generally about God and going to church, but it's worth noting that, from what is publicly available for us to see, his nun aunt does not seem to be the kind of Catholic you might expect, given her nephew's path. Here's NBC again. "Be open to diversity," Sister Regina said during a 2020 commencement address to graduates at Ursuline High School. "Do not be afraid of those who are different from you. It's okay to change your thinking. Change is the constant in our lives."
Oh, so that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So that's so different from our...
She sounds
in one ear, cool. Maybe out the other.
Yeah.
One end of the meatball, out the other end of the meatball.
Yeah.
Yeah. His priest uncle, Father Rogers, has been known to recite Teddy Roosevelt's Man in the Arena speech from the pulpit, but doesn't have a reputation for bringing up politics in a more relevant modern sense. He has a sizable fan base among the Catholic subculture, including many people who have followed him from two different churches because of his raw charisma. It's said he doesn't need a microphone to reach the back pews. I bring this up because it's a notably distinct difference between our Ron and his elder kin. DeSantis is known for a lot of things, but in-person charisma is not one of them. People who know the family will say that he takes after his mom, Karen, more, as she is something of an introvert and uncomfortable with the spotlight. Even as he's become a national figure, she doesn't really show up in public, which, you know, is her right.
He should take her
her advice. Yeah.
Her approach to it.
Avoid being known by people. Yeah.
God. You know, a big weakness for Ron seems to be being perceived.
Exactly. If no one could see or be aware of him, he would be a lot more likable.
Man, I bet he wanted to be like his uncle so bad. It was the uncle, right? It was the uncle.
Yeah.
He just beloved never had speaker. That juice. Mm-hmm.
No, he's too much of a meatball, not a speech
ball. A dry meatball at that.
A dry meatball,
absolutely.
Exactly.
The driest meatball. As a kid, young Ron was bright and a good student. Excellent student, actually. His grades were so good that one teacher would describe him as having a Stepford report card. He was also a very capable athlete, and in his youth, Ron's first love was baseball. He was known to other kids as D, which he still prefers to be called and claims to like more than his real name. So, you know, that's the ad he should have gone with. Florida got that D, you know?
Got that D, yeah.
Yeah, they should have.
Yeah.
Take this D. Put this D in you.
Ron, America. If you weren't a coward, we would support you. Just based on that. Don't even care about your politics. Just a good D joke.
Can't co-sign that. I feel like if you weren't a coward, he'd be saying a lot worse stuff than he already is.
That is almost certainly true, Cody. K money, C money. Anyway,
thank you.
The earliest influential book that Ron read as a kid was The Science of Hitting by baseball legend Ted Williams. One of Ted's pieces of advice in that tome is to be very careful about the swings that you choose to take. Ron's father claims his son took this advice to heart, telling The New Yorker, "I must have thrown 500,000 pitches to Ron. I think he swung at about 500 of them." What are you laughing about there, Cody?
Well, he went after Disney, like... 7 months ago.
I know. He did like, not learn man, that you, fucking you, lesson.
That did not stick with you, man. Pick well, your battles. It's
actually, you know, I might argue, Cody, and this is one of the things I find interesting about Ron. He did abide by that advice in his life and career up until like a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. Like he's even the most of his political career extremely consistent. It's really about a little less than 2 years ago that he decides to take some really wild swings that have just shattered him. Yeah. Which is interesting to me. Like you almost get the feeling like this guy is like this disciplined coiled spring and managed to like keep himself in line and then just for whatever reason 2022 decides.
Yeah,
it's time to go off the leash. No, it was not.
Crisis.
No, it was not. Yeah, yeah, maybe.
So I think the Trumpification of his desires, and I think the libs of TikTok talkification. Like he's got some people surrounding him that are very online and radical in the bad sense of the word.
Radical, you could call him.
You could. That I feel like even that gives him too much. Cred, but like this sort of like. He's been sort of injected with a lot of awful shit that he's let sort of seep into him. Because he's a dry meatball, so they're pumping him full of, like, the poison.
Yeah, meatball juice.
Which he needs.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Okay. So,
I don't know. I'm mixed up. I don't know.
His hometown was Dunedin, which is famous both for its longstanding lawsuit with the Tolkien estate over its name and for baseball. It was the spring training home of the Toronto Blue Jays, so as a kid, Ron could easily go down the street and watch the pros play. His upbringing was very parochial, and he notes that until he graduated high school, he had rarely traveled further than 5 miles away from his house for anything but baseball. In his memoir, he writes, "Baseball was the engine that expanded my horizons. In those days, little leagues like Dunedin National had a regular season in which the individual teams, each sponsored by a local business, would compete against each other." Now, I also played Little League baseball. Did you play Little League, either of y'all?
I did.
I sure did.
Yeah. I think it should be a federal felony to make children play baseball, but I'm not sure if you guys had a better experience, maybe.
Maybe slightly better.
I enjoyed it. Personally.
Okay. Wow.
There's diversity on the panel today. It's good.
Sure. Yeah. Criminals.
A variety of opinions.
Mm-hmm. Well, Meatball Ron loved it. Couldn't get enough baseball. And he was very good, and so was his team. He kind of like lands in with this group of boys who are all, they make like a pact when they're 11 or 12 together to get to the Nationals effectively. They do very well. The first big year they get to the district tournament. They're eliminated by game 3, but like it's further than they thought they were going to get. Ron and his teammates are super like 4 of them are going to wind up getting drafted into the majors. Like they are like it's kind of a dream team of little boys.
Yeah. Baseball Ron.
After getting eliminated in game 3 of the district tournament, they train even harder to compete the next year with the hope of earning a spot in the prestigious Little League World Series in Williamsport. News articles often include a photo of Ron's team from this period. You see him holding an aluminum bat on his shoulder. One local Tampa source described him as staring into the camera with a look so assured it's almost unnerving on a 12-year-old. You get similar hype in other write-ups, most of which describe him as an unusually serious kid. I don't see it. I haven't found that photo, but I've got another one here, and like he just looks like a normal preteen boy. Like,
I want to see that, the unnerving one, because I feel like unnerving is a very another good word to describe him and his interactions with people.
Yes.
Very serious kid?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't. In this photo, he's just laughing like the others. Like, he just looks like a smiling kid. He does look like
he's not putting on the face, right?
No,
we've also all seen him laugh at this point. I think.
Yeah, his nightmare laugh, like the crowing of a fucking funeral bird.
Oh yeah, he looks smiling. Laughing.
He looks like a boy,
like a happy kid.
Yeah, he's the kid. Yeah,
what happened, Ron?
What happened? Well, that's what we're talking about today. Whether or not he was an unusually serious kid, he was openly ambitious in a way that is not the norm for preteen boys. From that Tampa Bay write-up, quote, "I always knew he was going into politics," said Brady Williams, who is now the Rays' AAA manager in Durham and was then one of DeSantis' closest friends. His goal was to be the president of the United States. Was that far-fetched? A lot of things we talked about that summer were far-fetched, and a lot of them happened. So he is one of these, and I do feel like I think we need a government agency specifically to go after little boys who talk relentlessly about becoming the president or
they
a billionaire.
Need to be tracked.
Yeah, they need to be tracked and monitored at all costs.
Yeah, parents have to like register them. Like, yeah, my son's been talking about becoming the president or the first trillionaire. You know, we gotta
tamp down on that.
Yeah,
deal with those ambitions.
Yeah,
our kids fucked up.
Yeah. This is a use that we could have for like Philly sports fans, right? Where the government sends a bus of them out to each of these kids with just like eggs to just like start pelting them. Like,
not gonna
happen. Oh yeah, you gotta be the president.
Oh, look at the president boy.
Actually, I think we may have solved a major societal problem here.
It creates jobs too.
Yeah, it creates jobs for Philly sports guys, most of whom are unemployed. Yeah,
fun jobs.
There's nothing anybody could possibly find wrong with this.
Mm-hmm. I think we've got a plan.
We solved the meatball problem.
Yeah, we've got it now. The next year, his little league team does much better. He describes them as storming into the regional tournament and making mincemeat of the other Southern teams. One of his former teammates has discussed how manically they had to train that year, rarely going 2 days in a week without playing. They eventually made it to the regional championships, where they won the Southern regional title and earned a spot in the national contest, or in the World Series. Quote, "I was surprised at how big of a deal it was for our community. We found ourselves on the local news and on the front page of the local newspapers, a long way from being a bunch of kids putting on a far-fetched motto beneath the brims of our hats. Williamsport is the Shangri-La for Little Leaguers. The games take place in an actual stadium that can hold more than 40,000 spectators, thanks to the terraced hills beyond the outfield fence. The field was perfectly manicured. When we first got a peek at the stadium, it was like entering Fenway Park or Wrigley Field for the first time. The teams all stayed in cabins on site, and there was a dining hall for all meals." And this is Meatball Ron's first brush with fame. This is the first time he's like on TV. He gets
little
card made of himself. Yeah.
Sees himself how he can be, how he should be, how he has the right to be, how it's his destiny to be.
You do get that feeling. Again, bring in Philly sports fans for the Little League World Series, you know? Give them free batteries. Just keep things tamped
free
down,
batteries?
You know?
Free batteries.
Oh, yeah. Philly's guys love their fucking batteries. So every biographical look at Ron will discuss his Little League team's rise to the championships. It does seem to have been a crucial moment for his self-conception, the time where he realized that his humble middle-class upbringing wouldn't lock him out of national aspirations. In his memoir, he also uses it as an excuse to make a baffling political point about China. So, apparently, the big Little League competition includes a team from Taiwan. It is the World Series. I don't know why. They lost their big game at Williamsport, and he describes the other team's pitcher as throwing like Nolan Ryan, which makes me think of the time Nolan Ryan cold-cocked that dude on the field, and I want to see Ron DeSantis take a haymaker from... Anyway, whatever.
After
losing to the Taiwanese team, this is the thing I don't understand why he brings up. So they eventually lose to this Taiwanese team, and then after noting this disappointing loss, Ron gives us this gem. "I also think it may have informed some of my later political judgments. For example, while my hostility towards the Chinese Communist Party and my support for Taiwan is reflected by my general political outlook, the respect I had for Taiwanese baseball no doubt made my pro-Taipei stance more natural. After all, I remembered playing ping pong against these guys, and they were just normal kids having fun, not Maoists trying to further a cultural revolution." Yeah, Han, I'm sure up, all preteen Chinese so kids are up. Hardcore Maoists.
You're a fucked
That's
up
how you're
going to
form
Ron.
Your political opinions.
God.
Yeah.
Like, the idea is so, it's just like, no, step dude, out of yourself.
If they'd been Beijing kids, you would have had the same experience because you're all fucking kids
Your
playing
kids
sports.
Play the game.
Like,
play the game.
Yeah, they're not going to be just like reading from the fucking Red Book to you.
That's so absurd. It just speaks mm-hmm. to like the way. Like his mind, like,
yeah,
this mind works of like, yeah, an experience. Well, I had mm-hmm. one experience with people who were different from me,
yeah,
and now that informs my entire worldview,
yeah,
whether it be negative or positive. It's just, yeah, this weird, like, well, whatever.
I hate
meatballs now.
I don't like meatballs anymore. So after graduating high school, Ron claims to have worked full-time at an electric company that had sponsored his little league team in order to pay for college. So they sponsor his team. The guy who runs the electric business company thing is like, Meatball Ron, if you ever want a gig once you're done with the baseballs, you got a gig mm-hmm. here. So he gets this job, and he will not shut up about this job, right? This is like the one blue collar moment of his life. Say, and
he's got to milk that.
Absolutely. As hard as he can. And he will use this. He's going to make as much political hay out of this motherfucking gig as it's possible to make. But milk, you know who else will milk a meatball, Cody? You know who loves milking meatballs? Can't get enough of that ball milk, as they call it.
Yeah. Who's the ball milk milkers?
Well, if you want ball, wow, Katie.
Ball milk. If you want ball milk, meat it.
Sincere question.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, you can ask Meatball Ron that. Her name is Casey, so, you know. Here's an ad. The evidence keeps pouring in. At this point, the facts are undeniable. It's an open and shut case. Monopoly Go is the most fun you can have in a mobile game. Millions of people pass Go every day because this game is always bringing something new to the table. Countless crazy tournaments you can join with your friends as partners or teams. Constantly changing challenges like money sprees or treasure hunts that keep it fresh with new wild mini-games. Timed events offering bonuses like massive multipliers or rent frenzies to help you get huge rewards. And there's so many rewards to discover. Rare stickers you can trade with friends to complete albums, delightful emojis to taunt people with when you raid their riches, unique playing pieces, and so much more. The verdict is in with Monopoly Go. There's something new to discover every time you play. So don't miss out. Go download it now for free on the App Store and Google Play.
My favorite spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. Wow, how have I been living like this? It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless, when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. Wow, how have I been affording this? It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/behind. That's mintmobile.com/behind. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/behind. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why I came back that way.
It was a fun choice, I think.
I do.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, thank you both. Mm. So Meatball Ron is very proud of his working class credentials as briefly an electrician. Now, he never bothers to interrogate whether anything has changed to make it harder for a kid today to pay for Yale tuition with an entry-level gig at a power company. What he does make time to do in his memoir is shit on those lazy millennials.
Quote, oh, thank goodness.
Well, it was common for rising college freshmen to spend their summer enjoying themselves on the beach and sleeping in until noon. I was up at the crack of dawn to start work just after 6 a.m., 5 days per week as an electrician's assistant. I made a mere $6 an hour, but it felt great to receive a paycheck for a good day's work.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're just describing a job.
Yeah, because you were a kid that didn't know better and you had a job. But
well, and also, like, you are going to Yale and you are legitimately one of the few working class kids there. But, like, I'm going to guarantee you most college students at most colleges worked because they're not Yaleys. They're not, they don't have, like, millionaire parents with legacy.
Right, like, go to a different school and your experience will be like, oh, everybody's kind of doing this thing that I'm doing.
You chose to go to the school for rich assholes, which is what Yale is. Everyone knows it. It's the school for rich psychopaths. And, like, you're being like, wow, nobody else here has a fucking job. Yeah, of course
what
not.
What do you expect? They're Yale. What do you?
Yeah, it's a mix of George H.W. Bush's blood sons and fucking illegitimate children. That's all of Yale except for you in this period, I assume. So
one assumes.
Yeah, one assumes. So Ron also uses his early work history to make the usual litany of conservative complaints against the regulatory state.
When I showed up to work that first day, I wore attire that was typical of what an electrician would wear. Jeans, a long-sleeved shirt, and an old pair of work boots. Then I was promptly sent home. Why? Because it wasn't clear if the old worn-out boots were actually OSHA approved. I didn't know what OSHA was, but I soon learned that the Occupational Health and Safety and Health Administration was a federal agency charged with promulgating workplace safety rules. The net result for me was that I had to spend the lion's share of what would end up being my first week's pay check buying a pair of boots that were clearly approved by OSHA. I doubt this made me any safer, but it did make me a tad bit poorer.
Now,
you
I have my doubts. We'll talk about this, but I have my doubts as to whether or not this happened. More accurately, I doubt if Ron DeSantis at the time had a serious issue with being required to wear approved safety footwear. It is very silly that he chose to complain specifically about footwear to make a point about unreasonable regulations, because electricians die all the fucking time if they don't wear proper footwear. It's an extremely reasonable regulation written in blood. Yeah. Here's one quote from a 2015 article in Electrical Contractor magazine titled Feet on the Ground. Bad things can happen with the wrong footwear. These are two real-life examples. An electrician wearing cowboy boots loses his footing and slips, and he comes into contact with a live conductor, resulting in his electrocution. In another example, a lineman wearing tennis shoes is electrocuted when his foot comes into contact with a fallen energized wire. The incident occurred when the victim was attempting to restore power disrupted by a severe storm. Both incidents could have been prevented had the victims been wearing proper protective footwear. And he does describe his boots as worn out. Now,
worn out! I was going to say, thank you.
Like, yeah, yes, you're saying your boots sucked. Like, this is a job that can't
boots.
And more to the point,
this element about regulations in general. It's that Dave Rubin thing on Rogan. I don't know if you've seen where he's like, yeah, all these regulations for building stuff. It's so you don't cut corners and have houses collapse or like the wire. Yeah. There are reasons that these exist. Not every single regulation in the world, but it's such a weird complaint. Also, shouldn't your boss buy those? Maybe that's the argument.
This is not an issue with regulations. This is an issue with the fact that independent contractors are like the legal classification is so fucked that your boss doesn't have to equip you with proper safety gear.
It should be required that the bosses provide these that you need. Sure. Yes, you need them. They're making you get them. You shouldn't have to pay for them necessarily.
Yes.
There's your little complaint, Ron.
No, but that can't be the complaint because that doesn't go along with conservative dogma. And
it probably was the complaint at the time. That's probably what bothered him at the time.
I can't believe I have to buy these.
Why do I have to buy this for myself? But
I mean, yes. I will say I wish he'd been allowed to work as an electrician wearing, let's just flip-flops. Those worn out, you know? Shoes. Yeah, flip-flops. Yes. Yeah. Now, because he was such a good student with excellent grades and extracurricular performance, Ron earned admittance to Yale. He was not a legacy admission. His parents certainly did not have the money to bribe a spot for their son in the prestigious school. It seems clear to me that Ron saw Yale as an opportunity for him to increase his social class and network with powerful rich people in the hopes of becoming one himself. He was successful there, becoming captain of the baseball team and rushing for the famous Delta Kappa Epsilon fraternity. Now, he is going to, as we'll say, really try to downplay the degree to which he fit in at Yale. But going to this fraternity puts him in rarefied air because DKE is one of the oldest frats in the country. Its alumni include George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, Teddy Roosevelt, and Rutherford B. Hayes, who I know is your favorite president, Cody. You're a big
okay, so
Rutherford to Stan, as we call them.
Mm-hmm. Hayes heads.
Yeah, Hayes heads. Sure.
Jeez.
Yeah. You got hay fever. That's another good one. Yeah. That's another good term for Rutherford B. Hayes fans.
Fans.
Yeah. Although I will say Dan Quayle was also a member of DKE, so it's not that rarefied, right? If they'll let Quayle in.
Sure.
So,
but it's the club that little boys growing up who want to be president.
Yes.
Go to.
It is exactly that club. And like, it is the kind of thing, clearly this was the thing he did because he thought at the time, this is the way to become president, right? You go to Yale, which is a very fancy school for presidents, and you go to fucking, you get into DKE, right? Now, because Republican politics have since taken a major populist plunge, particularly in the last 6-7 years, Ron has now been forced to disavow his alma mater. Roughly half of the first 20% of his memoir is just him shitting on everyone but him at Yale to try to salvage his blue collar credentials. he does this by trying to paint the school that both Georges Bush went to as a breeding ground for communists. Yes.
What?
Oh, man, yeah. He's really trying to dance a tightrope right now.
Yeah.
All of these different people he is.
Yeah. This part's fun. While Yale's popular motto made homage to God and country, the ethos of the university's academics was hostility to the Almighty and disparagement of America. Before I got to Yale, I believe that almost all Americans were proud that our nation defeated the Soviet Union to win the Cold War. But at Yale, I was told that the United States was to blame for the conflict in the first place, not the Stalin-era Soviets. While the late 1990s was one of the most prosperous times in human history, at Yale, we were led to believe that communism was superior, even though it was impossible to even one example of the superiority, since real communism had never been tried. I wondered if some of my professors and classmates rooted for Ivan Drago to defeat Rocky Balboa in Rocky IV. Just a amazing paragraph.
What a rich passage.
He didn't get his book fact-checked. Wow.
I don't believe
communist
they were saying that.
That's what
Yale.
I'm saying.
No. Like, I don't believe
anybody
you,
could push back on this.
No.
They've never taught that. Not now, not then.
It's so funny how, like,
I simply don't believe it.
This, like, Red Scare stuff is so funny. And, like, I mean, it's alarming for sure. But, like, just like how hard he's going in on this. Like, oh, I just need to, like, say that communism is bad and also, like, distance myself from the clear path that I chose for myself. I don't believe you, Ron, is my point, I think.
Yeah, I don't believe Ron.
You're lying.
He's definitely a liar.
Oh, the commies at Yale. What the fuck?
The fucking commies at Yale don't even like Rocky.
Yes.
Don't even like seminal film Rocky IV.
Yeah.
Not even one of the good Rockies. Anyway.
He's such a it's such a funny, like, he's such a Ted Cruz in so many ways too, of just like the touch, that cultural touchstone. I know it too. I
the
know.
Rocky
you,
Four.
You know, you are like a culture, pop culture. Ha ha.
Yeah.
Like, he's such a fucking alien freak.
A fucking meatball. Anyway, DeSantis really goes on to note that experiencing unbridled leftism on the fucking Yale campus is what pushed him right. He does say that. He includes that line. I was forced into conservatism by those Yale communists.
Oh my god.
The gender studies at Yale. Yeah. Like, give me a
fucking
break.
Wild.
Oh my god.
Now,
as you're probably
it's like
not going to
Sarah be, Lawrence or something.
Yeah, as you're probably not going to be surprised to hear, not everyone who went to college with old Ronnie D had a positive opinion of him. And I'm going to quote
oh,
from an article.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Here's a fun quote from an article in The New Yorker. Some recall that DeSantis was so intensely focused that he wasn't much of a teammate. Ron is the most selfish person I have ever interacted with, another teammate told me. He has always loved embarrassing and humiliating people. I'm speaking for others. He was the biggest dick we knew. But the same teammate praised DeSantis's intellect. This is the frustrating part. He's so fucking smart and so creative. You couldn't even plagiarize off his work. He'd take some angle, and everyone knew there was only one person who could have done that. Mm-hmm. So yeah. He's a smart asshole who likes to bully people. That's
make him president.
That's
I tell you,
that's who we want.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But I mean, like, not that smart though, because sometimes he's.
Well, this guy may not be very smart, right? He's another Yale dude, and yeah, Yale's given us a lot of dipshits. So.
Well, there's an element too of just like, yeah, you got good grades, you like worked hard, but like, there's like
that's different than
it's. It's related. I don't know.
Yeah.
What
is intelligence, right? That gets us into a, anyway, whatever. Let's move on. He's a dick and selfish.
Yeah.
After he graduated with honors, Ron became a history teacher and taught for a year at the prestigious Darlington School in Rome, Georgia. It is here that he first runs into his first serious controversy. Last year, a source with, quote, close knowledge of the matter provided information to The Hill about a photo that had started going viral. This photo showed a young adult, Ronnie D, posing with teenage girls, some of whom were students of his, while holding a beer. Now, this picture that first came to prominence when Trump started his campaign against Meatball Ron. The former president shared this picture from another user's post with a text, "That's not Ron, is it? He would never do such a thing, question mark." Now,
he
did indeed. And this original post, like Trump was, the post he was sharing included a caption by another user that read, "Ron DeSantis was having a drink party with his students when he was a high school teacher."
Oh,
yeah,
God.
Such a weird way to frame it.
A drink party.
Mm-hmm.
Also, but also Trump.
Spoken like
but also
someone
Trump
who's never
commenting,
been invited to a drink party.
Yeah, Trump commenting on somebody
there's a
else's
lot
photo
that's,
with a woman.
That's silly
very
about this.
Like,
yes.
Wait, so who used the phrase drink party?
Yeah.
Person who originally posted.
Okay,
because
that is a Twitter blue ass phrase.
Twitter blue phrase.
God, a drink party.
Yeah.
When you're having your drink parties with your leftists at Yale.
Yeah,
again.
That is a phrase written by someone who has forgotten the face of his mother in favor of an Elon Musk Snapple fact.
Unreal.
And has never been invited to a drink party.
And never would be invited to a drink party.
Never been invited to a drink party. I also love just like, obviously, we don't need to get too much into the Trump of it all, but the idea of Trump sharing this photo.
Yeah.
Bro, there are stories of you walking in at Miss Teen USA.
You were on Epstein's plane.
Dog. What are you doing? But also, like, he's Teflon.
It doesn't matter. Yeah,
it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah,
God, man, fuck that guy.
The post that Trump was quoting went on to say, "Having drinks with underage girls and cuddling them look pretty gross and ephebophilia-esque."
Oh, honey, which is,
it's also you get a
Twitter
lot from
it.
The post. Yeah, very Twitter because it's like. There. Yeah, it's the very libertarian thing to like really emphasize the difference between pedophilia and ephebophilia.
You gotta make that distinction.
You gotta make that.
Bitcoin Embargo, NFT profile. Oh my God.
Yeah, this guy owns a bored ape. Absolutely.
Damn, absolutely. All his apes are gone though.
All his apes
should've gotten
are
that
gone.
Slurp juice. You know who doesn't have slurp juice? Meatball Ron.
That's right. Can't even slurp. Now, this created an uproar on conservative social media, and The Hill, which is a liberal-leaning publication, talked to someone who had apparently... Yeah, it's kind of libby, yeah. More on the lib side.
Centrist,
I wouldn't call it a conservative. It's certainly not like a left-wing rag or whatever, but it's like...
No.
It's not conservative media. Talked to someone who had apparently been at the party where Ron has his arms around these girls drinking a beer. According to our whistleblower, very silly thing to call a whistleblower, so by the way. fucking ridiculous.
According to like the microfiche we found in the fucking old yearbook. Like, what? Come on.
DeSantis had a reputation among students for being a young, hot teacher who girls loved. And the girls in the photo are believed to have graduated in 2002, making them seniors at the time. Hill Reporter also added, the source who provided the photo says that it was taken prior to graduation, meaning the young girls would have still been DeSantis' responsibility at the time. So that's that is gross. That's
it is
I would
gross.
Posit, even if they weren't his responsibility, he is having drinks with
by the
high school seniors.
Time you have graduated college and are working as a teacher, shouldn't be drinking with high school girls.
Especially not at a drink party.
It's
not a drink
pathetic.
Party.
Not at a drink party.
It is also sad. It's like we all knew guys.
Oh, it's very sad.
I mean, I suppose you could drink some water with some teenage girls in class, I suppose, but that's not the same thing at all.
Although I would say if anyone ever described to me that they were drinking water with teenage girls at their school, I'd be like, well, why are we talking about this way? That's off-putting. That's peculiar. Most people don't describe it that way. So the New York Times followed up the Hill's reporting here, positively IDing DeSantis as the man in the photo and finding further sources that would back up in several interviews that, quote, several students recalled Mr. DeSantis as a frequent presence at parties with the seniors who lived in town. So that is deeply off-putting.
Frequent.
Yeah, he is crashing teen girl parties.
A regular face at the drink parties.
Yes. Which, like,
I don't think their parents would like that.
Yeah, and it's the Times report reveals nothing damning in a legal matter, right? There's no one is accusing him of like sexual harassment or assault or of like anything like that. Those allegations just aren't present. But there's not a good reason why as a teacher and an adult you become a frequent presence at high school parties.
No.
Like there's not a non-creepy way for that to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not there because you really get on with these teenagers.
In part.
You're really lit up intellectually from the conversation at the drink party. I don't think so.
The best case scenario is like you have no friends and no sense of judgment. Feel like you'll get along better with people who have less life experience.
Right, because it's not even like this is like his hometown or something.
No.
It's not like, oh, I knew, like, oh, I was a senior and this was a sophomore.
Yeah, and they were like freshmen or whatever.
Yeah, it's so, like, a new town and you're like hanging out in high school. Like, God,
no.
Buddy.
One of the sources that I'm going to continue to quote from that Times article. Two former students, both women, remembered him attending at least two parties where alcohol was served. But they said that the parties took place after graduation and that they were not bothered by his presence at the time, although they question it now. Mm. It was his first job out of Yale. He was cute. We didn't really think too much about it. Yeah.
You were kids. Yeah, why would you?
You were in high school. Exactly.
You had no context.
Yeah, that's why it's the adult's responsibility to not be a weirdo. Yeah. Well, Mr. D shows up at a lot of parties. He's always taking pictures with girls.
They're like, Mr. D's not a normal teacher. He's a cool teacher.
Cool.
Yeah.
But then, like, 5 years later, they're like, oh, no.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Right, because it's also not even, like, high school, like, in 2020, where, that is kind of, like, understood. It's like, no, that's weird. It's weird.
Yeah.
Lots changed in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for that changing, at least.
Yes.
And also hasn't changed anything.
It also hasn't changed. So after this really creepy gap year, he enrolls in Harvard Law School. Again, he's doing this because he is trying to maximize his chance of like being accepted as a member of like the upper crust conservative intelligentsia.
In the club. So then you can rule the club.
You want to be a part of the Illuminati, you got to do the game.
Yeah, yeah, you got to do the gig. He claims now that he decided to go to Harvard because he was motivated by Tom Cruise's performance in A Few Good Men. Like Tom's character, he became a judge advocate general, joins the Navy, and gets deployed to Iraq as a lawyer with a SEAL team. Because the Navy SEALs have the reputation that they have among conservatives, Ron has attempted to debate. He's basically like claimed like he will always say I deployed with the SEALs, which is technically accurate, but he's clearly trying to like he's a lawyer. His job is when they go shoot people to be like, yep, you're allowed to shoot these people. Like, that's why what he was doing. He makes a big point about this now in all of his campaign events. He told a voter in New Hampshire this July, "I'm the only veteran running out of all these candidates. I'll be the first president elected since 1988 who's actually served in a war." Now, that is true. Although he was not out, you know, getting shot at or doing anything. Yes. He was looking at paperwork. He was being a lawyer. He was also not universally popular among his comrades at the time. From the New Yorker, quote, "A colleague who served with DeSantis remembered, Ron was a voracious worker and he worked at phenomenal speed. He was a superb writer, especially for his age. But even then, his ambition seemed consuming. Ron's a user, the former colleague told me. If you had utility to him, he would be nice to you. If you didn't, he wouldn't give you the time of day."
I gotta say, this is a little controversial, but I hate people like that. I really do.
Yeah.
Bold stance.
Of course he is. And it's like, yeah.
This is also, it's interesting because I mean, sure, we'll get into this, but it's that a lot of these elements are very heavily reflected in his governance.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And everything his policies about
and how he approaches politics. And
yeah,
it's not a good guy. Not a bad meatball.
Yeah. Bad meatball. Now, you know what is a good meatball?
I don't know, something like with bison.
Bison! You can make a fine bison meatball. You guys want my wild game meat recipe that I really? It's great if you've got like wild boar, you know, anything that's like kind of get you know, if you've got like a bunch of ground up boar meat or whatever.
Do you have anything for like impossible beef?
You could do this with impossible beef. You could do this with like ground venison. I would take. A pound of ground venison, a pound of ground boar meat, and mix them together with a whole sleeve of saltine crackers. You just crumble up in there. You crack one, maybe two eggs in, stir it all together. Then you baste it with either barbecue sauce or ketchup, and you bake that shit in the oven. And you cook yourself a delicious meatloaf. It's perfect.
Oh, meatloaf. Delightful food. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Meatloaf.
Quality meatloaf.
It's like, when do we roll the meatloaf into balls? Oh, I see.
No. Meatloaf. No.
But meatloaf.
Because the loaf is the strongest shape in nature. Mm-hmm. You could do a meatloaf ball, Katie. You could chop up meatloaf. And
like,
then,
I'm sorry, that just sounds like a nice thing for like a party.
It's like the crab shape. How like it sort of independently appears in all sort of all across nature. The loaf appears all across
so
nature.
So, question, were we about to throw to ads?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
That's what this whole thing is about?
Yes,
okay,
yes,
perfect.
Yes. Here's an ad.
The evidence keeps pouring in. At this point, the facts are undeniable. It's an open and shut case. Monopoly Go is the most fun you can have in a mobile game. Millions of people pass Go every day because this game is always bringing something new to the table. Countless crazy tournaments you can join with your friends as partners or teams. Constantly changing challenges like money sprees or treasure hunts that keep it fresh with new wild mini-games. Timed events offering bonuses like massive multipliers or rent frenzies to help you get huge rewards. And there's so many rewards to discover. Rare stickers you can trade with friends to complete albums, delightful emojis to taunt people with when you raid their riches, unique playing pieces, and so much more. The verdict is in with Monopoly Go. There's something new to discover every time you play. So don't miss out. Go download it now for free on the App Store and Google Play.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back. And I wanted to delay this next part because it's horrible. Oh. Because after being in Iraq, Ron gets stationed in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Mm. Now, this is by far the most contentious part of his backstory, and so I will be very careful in my phrasing here. In a 2006 interview with CBS, DeSantis told his interviewer that at one point, several prisoners launched a hunger strike while he was at Guantanamo. He says that his commanding officer asked him, "How do I combat this?" And Ron answered, "Hey, you can actually force feed. Here's what you can do. Here's kind of the rules for that." Now, there's some questionable elements of this recollection because force feeding started at Guantanamo slightly before DeSantis actually got sent there. So he's probably exaggerating in order to take credit for
the
what
thing.
What is torture, right? This is torture we're talking about.
I actually invented a fun new way to torture people.
Yes. Hurting them was my idea. Ultimately, the Pentagon authorized force feeding. Detainees would be strapped to a chair. A nurse would force a lubricated tube down their nose and then would pump in nutritional supplements. Lawyers for detainees have argued that this was torture because force feeding is banned by a UN convention against torture. Former inmates, now released, have accused DeSantis of having played a role in their torture. Mansour Adafi wrote an article for Al Jazeera and described meeting DeSantis, who initially told him that he was at Guantanamo to ensure that prisoners' rights were respected. Quote, "I remember him asking why we were all still on hunger strike. We told him to look around. Camp Delta was constructed from metal shipping containers, divided into cages with wire mesh. In the summer, the cages were like ovens. In the winter, they were cold and wet. They were loud with huge fans and the echoes of all the men's voices. There was the persistent harassment by guards, desecration of Qurans, non-existent medical care, systematic torture, and being cut off completely from the outside world. We told DeSantis we were on hunger strike because we wanted to know why we were being imprisoned, because we wanted a fair judicial process to prove our innocence. He took notes. He promised to register our complaints." Now, Ron may or may not have registered their complaints. We don't know, but it had no impact on what happened next. Days later, Adafi was brought back to the rec yard, where nurses and Navy corpsmen, which is Navy medics essentially, were waiting with a restraint chair and several cases of Ensure. Ron DeSantis and other JAG officers stood nearby, observing. Quote, "I was informed that the U.S. government was determined to break the hunger strike. The doctor in charge, a colonel, told me that he did not care if I was innocent or protesting mistreatment. He was there for one thing, to make me eat. I refused and was immediately and violently strapped into the chair so tightly that I could not move. A nurse forced a thick tube into my nose and down my throat. My nose bled and the pain was so great that I thought my head would explode. The nurse would not stop. Instead, he began pouring Ensure into a feeder bag attached to the tube. They poured can after can into the feeder bag until my stomach and throat were so full that Ensure poured back out of my mouth and nose. I thought I was going to drown. If you throw up, a corpsman said, we'll start from the beginning with a new case and fill you up again. As I tried to break free, I noticed DeSantis's handsome face among the crowd at the other side of the chain link. He was watching me struggle. He was smiling and laughing with other officers as I screamed in pain." Mm-hmm. It is very upsetting, yeah.
Yeah.
Cody, you got a good meatball joke?
Something about... Oh, no, but I did think when you were describing this, it sounded like you said jag off.
Mm-hmm. I did too.
That's good.
I thought they were going to say the other jag off. I'm glad
we pulled out of this tailspin.
Also, I mean, There's been some references to him being handsome, and I don't agree with that.
They keep saying he's handsome. Yeah.
I keep looking him up and being like, is he though? But I know, but multiple people, there's been multiple suggestions today, and I've had a, I take issue
It is really interesting that Adafi specializes, like specifies that, that he's like getting torched
his
and is like,
face.
Damn, that guy's kind of good looking though. Anyway. Peculiar. The things that occur to you when you're in when you're in an intense situation.
Peculiar.
So Adafi was one of several former inmates who claimed to have recognized DeSantis. He was featured along with several whistleblowers in an unreleased Vice documentary. The whistleblowers include a former U.S. Naval Sergeant, Joe Hickman. So Joe was on guard duty during a night when three prisoners, the ringleaders of the hunger strike, died somewhat mysteriously. Our government claims that these guys all were had a suicide pact together, right? That they committed suicide. Hickman does not agree with this. Again, he was on guard duty that night, and he believes the men were assassinated to restore order and put an end to the strike, which was very bad PR for the U.S. government. From a write-up by the Daily Beast, quote, Hickman, who later contributed as a whistleblower for the Justice Department's investigation into the deaths, recalled DeSantis as popular and extremely handsome. So there we go again. Navy girls would go crazy.
I feel like
over
you
him.
Added that in just to fuck with
no,
me.
No, no, I'm not. I swear to God, I'm not added a like. It's just a thing that comes up with like all everyone from these girls at this at the school he taught at to this sergeant to the dude he was helping to torture. So all mention this. I don't get it, but it's like an undeniable thing. You have to acknowledge it. Like,
can't ignore it. You're
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Okay. I agree. I do agree for the record. I don't understand this, and it makes me question my own sanity. It's like fucking being best friends with Jimmy Stewart in that movie where he sees the giant rabbit, and you're just like, is there really a rabbit? Like, he's so consistent really? About this. What am I missing? Like, yeah. Fucking Harvey's somewhere around here. Yeah. great movie, by the way, Harvey.
Check it.
Classic. Yeah, classic. I'm going to continue that quote.
Yes, sorry,
Navy girls would go crazy over him, Hickman said, although he added that he doesn't believe DeSantis, who became a JAG straight out of Harvard Law, I'd argue he's been a JAG forever, would have been in the room that night. They weren't going to give somebody like that kind of responsibility, Hickman said in the transcript. So that Vice documentary was canceled at the last minute for very shady but unclear reasons. It seems likely that it was killed to avoid angering a potential future president out of cowardice at the highest levels of a failing media company. But I just really have nothing more to say because it's unclear still at this point. In the spring of 2006, Ron met his future wife, Casey, at a driving range at the University of North Florida. Again, not Flo-Rida. He and his wife did not meet on Flo-Rida. Again,
the subreddit
fills with confusion every time we mention this, so I just want to make sure we're really keeping it straight. It is from this period that we get our only context on Ron's flirtation techniques, which I know everyone's very excited to learn about.
How does the handsome man flirt?
I'm going to read you how
you're going to regret asking that.
Yeah. This is how he opens with his future wife. Hello, somebody left these balls behind. Would you like to have them?
Meatballs?
Yeah.
No, golf balls.
It's a driving range, right?
Yeah, it's a driving range, balls. Yeah. You want my balls? Yeah. Very, very funny.
Wow.
This works on Casey, and their first date is that evening at Beef O'Brady's, which is apparently a restaurant.
For meatballs?
What do you like? Balls? I don't know, would you like some balls and beef? People say I'm very handsome.
Some people, this guy I tortured, handsome.
This guy I tortured and teenage girls at a party with, they think I'm
he's got a poster in his like I imagine his apartment is completely empty aside from a pillow and a blanket on the floor and a poster he made that says like people who think I am attractive, guys I tortured at Guantanamo, teenagers
at drink
sergeant
you question mark.
Oh, great.
So, Jill Casey Black, usually called Casey, had grown up in Troy, Ohio, one of two daughters of an optometrist and a speech pathologist. She had also been an active student athlete and had done very well in school. She went to the University of Charleston and graduated with a degree in economics and French. She competed as an equestrian and had started a promising career as a reporter and on-screen talent for the local Jacksonville station WJTX. The one story I found of her as a TV reporter is that there was a story about an alligator that had gotten into a suburban neighborhood, which she described as a story with real teeth. If you're curious as to the level of rigor she brought to journalism as a profession.
You know what they call getting a degree in economics and French?
What's that?
Monet.
Okay.
Studying Monet? Okay. No? Studying Monet.
You're proud of yourself, aren't you, Cody?
That is good.
Yeah.
Studying Monet!
Yeah. No, we get it.
No, because it's like, okay, wait.
We get it. No.
Good one, buddy.
Thank you.
Good one, buddy. Yeah. So they get hitched in 2009 at Disney World.
Now, how about that?
That is funny because of the war he's going to have with Disney later.
That he wants them accounts, to not do it anymore.
By all accounts, it's not a very Disney wedding. There's not like Mickey or any characters hanging around. They go to Epcot after, which is like the least Disney thing to do at Disney World. I think it's more of a rich Florida people thing than a Disney super fan thing, right? Like Disney World's just
You got to get the photos. Yeah, and it's not like, oh, I got the prince is here and the other prince. Right. Oh, and the prince is over there.
Yeah exactly. The two are a famously power couple in Florida politics, where Ron is tight-lipped and reserved and introverted. Casey is an extrovert. She's going to do, when he runs for office, she does a lot of on-the-ground campaigning, even like knocking on doors for him. She does a lot of introducing him at events and stuff. Like, she is the talker of the two of them.
Because she's more likable.
Here's my weird husband.
By far, yeah.
Isn't he handsome?
Yeah, look at me.
Just look at him. Don't listen to his words.
Yeah.
I'll talk.
I'm attractive and charismatic. Please ignore my husband's words.
Yeah. I studied Monet in college.
Way to go, Cody. So these ambitions, and she is, you know, the two are by all accounts deeply in love and partners in Ron's political ambitions. And those ambitions would become evident for the first time in 2012 when Ron noticed that the newly drawn 6th district in Florida had, again, not Flo Rida, Florida, had an open campaign for Congress. It was a tweener district in between Jacksonville and Orlando and had no incumbent. Because of the demographics of the district, it would be a guaranteed win for any Republican who could win the nomination. With Casey at his side, Meatball Ron decided he was going to be that Republican. And we will talk about that and his rise to power in part two.
I feel like there's also something to say about the phrase tweener district.
Yeah.
And Ron's.
Yeah. It's uncomfortable to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tweens. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
his wife is age appropriate, though. So.
Yeah. Good for that.
Good
for them.
Yep. Yep. He is married to an adult. That's positive. Shows growth.
We like to end things on a positive note.
Yeah.
Modern politics.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, thanks for having us here for this.
Yeah. How you feeling, guys?
All right.
I'm feeling excited to see Meatball Ron up on stage just, you know, just being
rolling
himself.
Around.
just being himself.
Yeah. Just be yourselves, you know? Mm. If you are a relentlessly dedicated psychopath who wants to become the president purely for reasons of self-gratification, don't let anything stop you, you know?
No.
Relentlessly craft a life towards that goal and proceed on a rocket ship-like course towards it until fucking Biff Tannen calls you Meatball Ron and utterly annihilates all of your dreams in a single shot.
It's honestly down, very tragic. Back to the earth.
Yeah. It's like the Death Star shooting a taxi cab. Just absolutely wiped out.
A handsome taxi cab.
Yeah, a handsome taxi cab. Anyway, you guys got some plugs?
Sure. You got shows.
Oh, yeah, we got shows. Mm-hmm. Check us out. We got a YouTube show called Some More News. It's also a podcast. And okay. we have a companion podcast called Even More News.
Hell yeah, you do.
Hell yeah, we do. Podcast. We've got a Patreon for that as well. Patreon.com/somemorenews. I've got a band called The Hot Shapes that has an album out now. Check it out on Bandcamp and SoundCloud. TheHotShapes.bandcamp.com.
Yeah,
we have
do
to
it.
Work this out where we split up the plugs because mm-hmm.
I got it all. Well, you said Cody go, so I did. But then I was like, well, Katie's not going to want to plug my band. So
no, you're right. We'll figure that out in the future. Yeah. I agree with what he said, but also I do want to plug you. His band. Go ahead, aww. Listen to his band.
So sweet. Do it.
It's good stuff.
Check it out.
All right. See you next episode, probably.
Yeah. See you next episode. You can find us at Cooler Zone Media. If you want to get this without ads, you can subscribe. And I'm gonna also put in a free plug for a YouTube channel that I like. Just Google Bobby Fingers YouTube. Watch the Steven Seagal video first. You'll be pleasantly surprised.
All right. God.
This is a bit...
No. This is just like my favorite thing that exists.
Okay.
This artist, I don't know why he doesn't have. What's Cody, you need to watch these videos. Bobby Fingers.
Okay.
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not familiar with this, but the thumbnails are interesting.
Yes. I have no way to describe this to you. There's three videos so far. Watch the one about Steven Seagal. That's all I'll tell you, listeners. I have no affiliation with this guy. I just love him.
All right. Looking forward to that.
We support supporting
Bye.
Artists.
Bye.
Behind the Bastards is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy. Yeah. Right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.